Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Monday, October 3rd, 2022. 4 weeks out from Halloween now.
Yeah, I can't believe it's October already. Just, you know, everything's just flying.
Yeah, and this time last year, we were into, like, second season of Mandalorian, so a lot of Grogu costumes out there. Any thoughts as to what this year will be the go-to Star Wars outfit?
I do think there will be a lot of Boba Fett and his partner, Fennec Shand. I do think that. And we might get the other Wookiee.
Yes. Is it the name that...
exactly. But no, I think there's going to be a lot of that. There will be clever people. I mean, if you're clever, you'll dress up as the biker gang. The cyber biker gang, that could be fun to do if you're in a group. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of different, I mean, but for selling wise, there's just going to be a lot of Baby Yoda, Mandalorian, and Boba Fett, I think.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm kind of hoping for Pelly. I really like Pelly.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, going to be a short show this week. I'm back down in Orlando. Len and I are working on a project that we can't quite announce yet.
Are you helping to clean up Animal Kingdom? Is that what you're doing?
Interesting you say that. I was in the Magic Kingdom today, and that was in good shape. If you're driving around the Orlando area, there's clearly evidence of trees being knocked around and some trees down and that sort of thing. But it's in pretty good shape. But at the same time, though, they got hit with so much rain here. They got 12 inches of rain.
Wow.
Totally overwhelmed the drainage system. Though, oddly enough, the one place that did not was the drainage system that General Joe Potter, when he was down here in the early 1960s, and the very first thing they built was the drainage system at Walt Disney World, and it held, you know, funneled these millions and millions of gallons of water into the further down into the Everglades. So,
well, it pays to do something right.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for.
I guess so, but... Speaking of the Disney parks and that sort of thing, that when I was down here previously, we're on the Wish, and I do have some thoughts about the Star Wars stuff on the boat. But before we get to that, I want to remind folks, the news portion of this week's episode of Looking at Lucasfilm is brought to you by Storybook Destination, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Okay. When the Wish was being built, one of the things that people kept talking about was the hyperspace lounge.
That's the adult lounge, right?
Well, I saw a good number of kids in the hyperspace lounge.
Oh.
The gimmick of the hyperspace lounge is every 10 to 15 minutes or so, the big window in the room, which is a panel of video screens, jumps to hyperspace, and you are then looking out at a different Star Wars location. And on paper, this is a wonderful idea. And I do have to say that when you are in the space and the ship is moving and you have that rumble of the engines, it's very convincing. However, the lounge itself is, I want to say, maybe 20 foot deep. And like 50 feet wide. So it's not a whole lot of space. And, well, the thing is, the Wish holds 4,000 people.
Wow.
So what they do to try to get people, as many people as possible in, they put a 45-minute limit on, you know, your time spent in the hyperspace lounge. And the big to-do about this just prior to the launch was the $5,000 drink that you could get in there.
Right.
That was served in the ice cream maker from Empire.
Did you see anybody that get that?
Well, no, because I spent a total of 10 minutes inside.
Oh,
I have to say that once you got inside and once you stared at the screen and saw how kind of underwhelming the space was, it was like, I don't know if I need to spend the whole 45 minutes in here.
Okay. Well, did they have food? Did they have drink? I mean, what was the whole, what was the menu like?
When I was in there, and it was right across from the Bayou Lounge. And whenever the Bayou Lounge would have music, or they did things like they taught classes about how to draw Disney characters, that sort of thing, the line would die down to get into Hyperspace Lounge. It would go from 10, 15, sometimes 20 people standing in the hallway patiently waiting for their chance to get into the lounge, to just two or three. And so, you know, was able to blip in. And the films that were presented on the giant screen behind the bar were really cleverly done. And if you were paying attention, you could recognize the vehicles being used, which were, you know, signature vehicles for select, you know, certain Star Wars characters. And it was just sort of so underwhelming. Basic. Yeah, and it's just sort of like, wow, okay, welcome to my rec room that I sort of themed okay. like Star Wars. So I guess I will have to give it another try.
And you have to get in with four people and buy that $5,000 drink?
No. You know, and while we're talking about things that were kind of underwhelming, I'm in kind of a weird position. I don't think a lot of people actually ever get to do this, but because of D23 being so close to the Disney Dish and the Disney Wish, I got to experience Rise of the Resistance on the West Coast within a week to 10 days of experiencing the East Coast version, the one at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Oh, cool.
Not
cool?
Well, no, you West Coast folks get the better deal. Your version of a Rise of the Resistance was in far better working condition. A lot more of the effects, whether it was the Kylo Ren figure that appears at the end and then gets almost sucked out of the ship. Likewise, when you sneak through the gunship portion of the vessel as you're trying to get to the drop thing, virtually everything was working. Where on the East Coast, a lot of effects that not working. Again, now, mind you, they were still running the attraction to full capacity, and as they do at Walt Disney World. In fact, that's kind of Walt Disney World's dirty little secret, is that they will run the attractions out here until they just can't run them anymore. Then until so many effects are broken that it's like, well, we have to close. We have to fix them.
Well, do people notice that? I mean, if you've never been on the ride before, would you notice that something is missing?
Nancy, who is not theme park crazy like myself, got off the East Coast version of Rise of the Resistance and was like, wow, that's a lot of broken effects. And so for a Nancy to have noticed that says a lot. But the thinking at Walt Disney World is where, you know, at Disneyland, 70% of the folks who come to Disneyland come from less than 100 miles away. So
right.
The thinking is, okay.
They can always come back.
They could always come back. Whereas the folks who come to Walt Disney World, it's supposedly the once in a lifetime trip. So, you know, it's, well, we got to keep this thing open.
Is that one reason why they don't do the holiday, the Haunted Mansion?
So interesting you mentioned that, because just today I was talking with somebody, because of course they're getting the Hatbot Ghost next year.
Oh, cool.
Finally that one comes out here. And I was flat out told that the reason that they finally decided to make that decision is someone in Anaheim shared how much money they were making off of Hatbox Ghost merch. And it's like, oh, let's do that. And also, one of the other reasons that they said that they could do this was a relatively quick drop-in. They could put that effect in. They could shut the attraction down for a week and have that loaded and fire it up again. Whereas I got somebody senior at the resort who told me, we're never, ever getting a Haunted Mansion holiday out here. And that, again, is because it's a 6-week load-in and it's a 3-week load-out.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, that means shutting down one of the most popular attractions in the park for 9 weeks total. And it's like, no, we can't do that in Florida. People would riot.
Yeah, to see. Well, I know this is getting a little off track, but I do have to ask this. I rode Haunted Mansion on my 9th birthday, which was August 10th, 1969.
Yep.
So did they have Hatbox Ghosts in the second day it was open? The reason I ask is I don't remember the ride because I was so afraid. Mm-hmm. All I did was bury my face in my dad's stomach because I could not. I was so terrified of that thing. Of course, afterwards I was fine, but I just wondered if the Hatbox Ghost was in there the second day it was open.
Hatbox was in there.
Okay.
Yeah, now, mind you, the reason that Hatbox got pulled out of the attraction is the effect where it was in the building just was not working the way Disney had hoped. He was directly across from the bride in the attic, and with each beat of her heart, his head would disappear and appear in the hat box. And the technology just was not there to pull off the effect. And evidently, in order to get it dark enough so the head would disappear under the hat and appear in the hat box, you couldn't see the figure. But again, if you hammer on Google hard enough, you can come up with this home movie that does, in fact, show the Hatbox Ghost in
okay.
there.
Well, at least I know that I was in the presence of the Hatbox Ghost, even though I didn't see it.
I've had it explained to me that this home movie was taken from the cast member previews.
Oh,
and that by the time the general public got on the ride, the Imagineers had sort of resigned themselves to the fact that this isn't working the way we hoped. And so they jerk it on out. By the way, the just recently somebody reached out about the East Coast version of stuff that disappeared out of the mansion in either the before it opened or in the early weeks of operation, but there's a slightly different setup in Florida. You get into the load area and then they take you up to the second floor, and they have an Escher staircase set up there now, but it used to be you'd pass by these giant spider webs. But what supposedly put this moment over the top is these giant spider webs with these giant spiders in them. And there was clearly a human body that had been spun up in the web. And it had just enough movement to suggest, oh, whoever is in webbed up like that is still alive. And you heard it like, and people swear for years that they saw this. And only just recently has a piece of concept art emerged, and evidently an early blueprint that listed giant spider's web and victim. So here's the joy, you know, the East Coast, West Coast, we all have our missing chunk of the Haunted Mansion, and I'm on the case to chase down that blueprint and that art to share for a reader who reached out recently.
So on the Disney Wish, was there any other Star Wars, were there characters, were there, you know, like a little show or anything?
Not that I saw, but remember, we are still in sort of maiden voyage, early shakedown for the Wish. And at some point in the future, we will get our Marvel days at sea. We will get our Star Wars days at sea.
Okay.
But yeah, for now, it was the Hyperspace Lounge and kind of underwhelming. But like I said, early on, let's give them some time. And there were other aspects of the boat that had the same issue. I mean, for example, people were talking about the Marvel restaurant, which the boat has only, you know, 6 or 8 weeks into doing its cruises, and evidently they've already changed the dinner show up there because it was scaring kids.
Oh, no.
Likewise, Frozen, the Arendelle celebration dinner, they very early on made a very big deal of the Olaf animatronic that was supposed to be featured in that show. And when we had dinner there that night, no Olaf. Somebody may have taken him out on deck and he may have melted, or they're technical something, you know. But again, it's just...
You're going to have to tell Josh Gad that you didn't see his performance.
I don't
He's going to be sorely disappointed.
I don't want to disappoint Josh. So, but again, Mr. Gad was at the most recent D23, named a Disney Legend. And also remember at the D23 Expo, we got to see the Indy 5 trailer, which supposedly leaked over the last day or so.
Well, you got to see it. I tried everything to get in there, but I couldn't get into that one. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any recording to that. But, I mean, you can see some things online, but I haven't seen the trailer yet. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the trailer.
Whatever is out there is at least using the stuff that we saw. So I don't know if somebody in the room managed to get a camera out or that sort of thing, but the whole intro, the I missed the desert, I missed the sea, I missed waking up every morning, wondering what wonderful adventure the new day will bring us. And that was Sala, John Rhys Davies, saying that. And the response here is correct. Indy saying that those days have come and gone. And Sala's response, perhaps, perhaps not. So it's like, it's got the major beats of what we saw in the room that day. And
well, how long was it? Was it just like a minute and a half?
It was standard trailer length, I want to say, just shy of 2 minutes. And the Mads Mikkelsen line to the effect of, who is this man? And you know, the effect of, I'm her godfather. So it's for the Phoebe Waller-Bridger character, which Helena, is that the name we remember?
Yeah, Helena.
Okay. It sounds right. But at the same time, it's like, you know, again, it bubbled up sometime today, and I imagine Disney, you know, online, and Disney Legal jumped on them like wolves. So it's since disappeared.
Well, that's if it's on YouTube, but Devin happens to, you know, he goes to Reddit, and there's people on Reddit that just are very sneaky about it. Mm-hmm. When Star Wars Celebration was up, he said that he got to see most of the panel trailers. And he said, how the heck do you see that? And he says, Reddit. But I'm not a Reddit guy. I don't know how to find things like that. I don't know the secret password or the secret handshake. So
based on the description, it certainly sounds like what I saw in the hall.
Yeah.
But trying to find it again to confirm that, it has been tough. So while we're talking about Mr. Ford, what do you make of this Thunderbolt story?
Well, I saw a picture, and he sure looks like Thunderbolt. He sure looks a lot like what William Hurt looks like. And I think it would be great. I mean, you know that he said he was going to, Harrison Ford said he was going to retire from Indiana Jones.
Right.
But this would be a great thing for him to do. And then plus, doesn't Thunderbolt become Red Hulk?
I guess we need to explain. The rumor that is currently making the rounds right now is, of course, we lost William Hurt earlier this year. Of course, he'd been playing General Thunderbolt Ross in the MCU as far back as The Incredible Hulk. And the MCU wants his character to continue. And as the story goes, Ford has supposedly been approached about being the recast, so to speak, picking up where William Hurt left off. And evidently, there's a handshake deal in place with Kevin Feige, head of MCU. But supposedly, Kathleen Kennedy, the head of Lucasfilm, asked that this news not be shared at the D23 Expo because she felt that the focus with Harrison should be on Indy 5, which arrives in theaters June 30th, 2023, whereas the Thunderbolts movie doesn't show up till a year and a month later, July 26, 2024. I guess I can buy that that might be Kathleen Kennedy's take on this, that she wants his moment in the sun to be his hail and farewell as Indy. And then after that, if, you know, oh, by the way, he's working with Marvel Studios and being the recast of Thunderbolt Ross, I guess I can understand that.
I can, too. I can understand it, but I can also understand that I don't think it would have taken anything away from Indiana Jones.
No, you're not wrong.
And I can see, you know, there's a lot of, you know, let's keep everything close to our vest. You know, it's the mystery box. It's, you know, let's focus on this thing and not the other. I mean, there are things in, if you remember, Eddie Murphy was nominated for the musical. The Girls.
Dream Girls.
And he got nominated and everybody thought he was going to win. But then they brought out the movie Norbert. And all of a sudden, his Q numbers went way down because of what a bad movie that was. And he didn't win. And a lot of people thought maybe it could have been because of that. So in that same vein, let's not take the spotlight off of Indiana Jones mm-hmm. and put it on something that is only a handshake.
Interesting point. But at the same time, this is what the internet thrives on. Silly news that might not be true. I mean, for example, another Star Wars related bit of info. I mean, Christian Bale got asked in the last week to 10 days, if you were going to be in the Star Wars universe, what would you do? And can you tell folks what Christian decided he wanted to be if he had the opportunity?
There's a funny meme-like thing where one of the stormtroopers is mm-hmm. going through a door and he hits his head. Mm-hmm. And you can see it's from, I believe, New Hope. And you can see it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think people saw it until maybe years after the movie came out. Mm-hmm. So when they asked Bale, what would you like to be? And he goes, I'd like to be that guy. I'd like to dress up as a stormtrooper, mm-hmm. walk through a door, and hit my head.
There's supposedly a documentary out there where Star Wars aficionados have tried to track down who was in the Stormtrooper outfit for that shot. And they were never able to actually track down who this gentleman was. But flip side, though, of course, after Christian's answer, the Star Wars community then began, oh, but if we could get Christian Bale, who should he play? And
yeah,
I had read somewhere that someone had suggested Thrawn.
People were talking about, because, of course, Ahsoka is getting close to coming out, mm-hmm. and they're announcing more and more actors into it. And on people's wish list was always mm-hmm. Lars Mikkelsen, Mads' brother, who is the voice in Rebels. Mm-hmm. But now people are talking of Christian Slater, and I think there's more than just, the rumors out there. I think there was something that was said to somebody else. Mm-hmm. It's more than just a wish list. I think it's more of a rumor.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, we'll tell you what, folks. That's going to do it for the film side of the equation. But when we get back from the break, Brian and I, of course, will discuss episode 4 of Andor and some other Lucasfilm properties that are headed our way on Disney Plus. Sadly, when this show goes live will be Wednesday, the 5th. And there'll be a brand new, the 5th episode of Andor, which Brian and I will not have seen at this point. But 4 definitely moved the story along. What was your take on this?
You can definitely tell that it's a different arc. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about it, the first 3 episodes kind of just ended one arc. Mm-hmm. You saw continuations like the one company, lieutenant or something, mm-hmm. that it was like he was fired. Mm-hmm. We don't know if he was fired, if he was reassigned, but we saw him going home to mother, mm-hmm. which was a very strange to me, because I don't know if we've ever seen anything like that in the Star Wars universe, where somebody, that supposedly should disappear, mm-hmm. now they have a new story that they're going to have. So I don't know, is he going to become part of the, Imperials? But he's going to be a character that is going to be continuing through or else they wouldn't have introduced this new story about him.
I do not think you are wrong. I mean, again, I think that Mr. Gilroy, who's, writing and directing Andor, is very much a constructionist. And the Cyril Karn character that Kyle Soler plays is one of the only people who's had, well, not necessarily a face-to-face encounter, because remember, Cassian basically held a gun to the back of his head and got the information he needed. But he's one of the only people who's actually dealt with Cassian. And I let me make a prediction here that the heist that we're seeing set up is successful. And as a direct result, the folks in the Empire, particularly the Deidre Miro character, the one who was angling to get in the mix to investigate this. The Empire is going to be looking for Cassian Andor on the heels of the success of this heist. And so they're going to be looking for people who've had dealings with him. So I would imagine Cyril's going to be pulled back in at that moment, because it's like, who has actually interacted with this guy?
Yeah, because if you think about it, with 12 episodes, there probably is going to be four arcs. So that would make sense that the next arc will be the heist. Mm-hmm. And then after that will be more. And then we've got a whole new season next year, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that makes sense. You have to have this. Mm-hmm. And that's something funny you never see. Whenever you see a heist film, like where Eagles Dare and stuff like that, you never see what happens at the end or after the end. You never see the follow-up. This should be really interesting.
And remember, you know, the whole conceit of season one and season two is that it takes us right up to the start of Rogue One. And so we are episode four, soon to be episode five. Right. So we are still putting the chess pieces down on the board. And think about what we saw the Stellan Skarsgård's character do, take on this elaborate disguise as a kind of goofy art dealer, and Mon Mothma, to see her come into the gallery and the two of them disappear into the back, and you know, suddenly it goes from, I'm getting a birthday present for my husband, to a very serious discussion and how the stakes are so much higher, and it's all new faces and they're clearly paying attention to her. And then to watch her domestic situation where she's got her husband, who is clearly, you know, just a party guy, so to speak, and likes hanging out with his powerful friends. And these are the people in the Senate who are cutting her off left and right.
And you notice also she says that there's somebody else. Mm-hmm. There's somebody in the wings. Mm-hmm. There's somebody. Do you have any idea who that could be?
The only theory I have right now going forward is the heist is successful, or at least successful enough that the Empire takes notice. And they then begin going back over, well, who's had any dealings with this guy? So I'm going to bet you that the Cyril Karn character, this is what gets him out of Mama's house.
Oh, okay.
And remember, they established that he returns to Coruscant? Yes.
Coruscant, yeah.
And they do the whole elaborate thing of he has to take the elevator down to the lower levels of the city. So he's taken a real step back in his life. So I think he will latch on to this opportunity to work with the Empire and do whatever he has to.
Well, yeah, but remember Mon Mothma said that she has somebody, that there's somebody that she's been in touch with. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be either Bail or Organa, or it could even be Princess Leia.
Interesting.
Because if it has to set up what happens right after Rogue One, then why not make an introduction to how Princess Leia is part of the Resistance?
Well, now, one thing you need to remember, though, that when we meet Mon Mothma in Rogue One, she is in the Rebellion. She is in hiding. They are as hesitant as they are to for the Rogue One mission to go forward because, you know, the stakes are too high. We could lose what little we have. So,
but then don't they give the plans to Leia?
Well, remember,
meaning that she is probably in the Resistance at this time.
I think you're talking about Y and Z. I think we're still talking about D and E.
You're right.
Remember, we are four episodes in. There are still eight for season one, and an additional 12 that we'll get in season two. So lots of story yet
lots of story, and it's getting into George territory because the politics are coming into this too.
Yep.
And it really is, especially the room with who was the Peter Cushing character?
Moff Tarkin.
Okay. You notice how the leader here, he looks a lot like Peter Cushing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's almost like a brother or a lookalike, but it gives you the feeling, it connects it, at least it did for me visually, but they're all in white too, which was very strange to see that. I just love how they're making it connecting, but it's not. It's its own different thing. Mm-hmm. It's got the heist thing going on, and those characters are great. Mm-hmm. Those people on the planet, and I can't wait to see this event that's supposed to happen, this meteor shower. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be, I mean, they just build up to all these like great things that should be happening.
Well, again, that's the thing. Tony Gilroy is no slouch at this stuff. So it's going to be fascinating to see where it goes forward from here. Now, on the other hand, we do have other things headed our way. And in fact, Skeleton Crew, you were just mentioning.
Wow. Yeah. They are, it's so funny because the Mandalorian we knew nothing about. And we knew that, you know, we knew what Mandalorians were. But with Skeleton Crew, again, we know nothing about it except mm-hmm. that Jude Law is in it. But right. now they're just like trickling things down. There's a video that you can find on YouTube and everywhere. And they it doesn't seem like they've taken it down yet. But what it is, it's a stunt. Mm-hmm. of a speeder, and there it's far away so you can hardly see it. It's a speeder and there's a character that falls off of it. And a lot of people are thinking that it could be the actor Ravi Kabat Conyers, mm-hmm. who plays the voice of Antonio in Encanto. Mm-hmm. And he's rumored to be in this. And I guess in the poster with Jude Law, you see Jude Law's head, but then you see the silhouettes of all the kids, and mm-hmm. people are picking out who is who. And they're thinking that that's what they seem to be dressed in the same manner that the guy falling off of the speeder is. Mm-hmm. And then there's another actress that they've rumored to be. Her name is Liana mm-hmm. Crater, who was in the Disney show Bunked. Mm-hmm. So that's what Disney seems to get the best actors, but they grab somebody from their stable. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole synergy thing. Like with Ms. Marvel, when you had the best friend and she's a big Disney star. Mm-hmm. So they just bring in people like that just to, you know, because a lot of kids like familiarity. Oh, so yeah, if they yeah. see somebody that they've seen before, then it's like, oh, that's the kid from Bunked or mm-hmm. whatever. But yeah, it looks like it's coming out there. And do you know if they're shooting in Manhattan, if they're shooting in the volume? Because they are shooting in L.A., right? Because they got that tax write-off.
They did. And from the look of the show, this is very apparent. Tony Gilroy made a conscious decision to go with physical sets versus the volume. Whereas it's been suggested Skeleton Crew is a little bigger, a little grander. In fact, that's one of the reasons they chase the tax credit. So one would imagine with that in the mix, probably more use of the volume. But I'll tell you what, let me make some calls. Let me nose around. Let me see what I can find out. But that's still undated, but it's coming in 2023. I think that's supposed to follow season 3 of The Mandalorian, which February 2023?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Now, there's only Tales of the Jedi in between that. There's nothing else. Or we got some kind of date on Bad Batch, didn't we? That was in March, I think.
Remember, that got pushed out to 2023. Oh,
yeah, that got pushed. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I'm just saying, after Andor, mm-hmm. there's not going to be anything, basically.
We still have, well, counting the episode that drops on the day that this podcast goes live.
That's right.
We got 7 episodes. You know,
we got 7 episodes. It's not over till December. You're right.
Don't pre-dread the ending. Just, you know,
I'm
like,
not. I just want to make sure that I have my Star Wars filled up. Okay. But, you know, with the holes in my memory, if I watch Mandalorian season 1 again, I bet I pick up on a lot more things that I missed forgot.
That could be. So, just finding the time to do that. That would be fun. All right. Well, anyway, folks, that is going to do it for this week for Looking at Lucasfilm. Brian, I know you've got a social media presence. Can you tell folks where they can find you?
Yeah, it's on Twitter, and it's Geek with Children, and Children is spelled Childrn. Mm-hmm. And I put up some things that I'm interested in, some things I see around, and things like that on that.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Beyond that, we have a couple of other podcasts here that if you want to listen to that might be fun. We've got, of course, The Mothership, Disney Dish with Len Testa. We have Fine Tuning. We have Marvelous Disney. And, of course, the show you're listening to today. And, by the way, if you could do Brian and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend Looking at Lucasfilm, that would be helpful. If you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. And that's going to do it for this week. So thanks so much for listening. And on behalf of Mr. Gunn, we will be back soon.